And welcome to the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. They got some great deals right now. They got some closeout pricing on some John Deere tractors you want to talk to them about. If you're looking for a tractor, now's the time to grab it. Spring is right around the corner, so go up and talk to them. Get yourself a brand new John Deere. They also have the new Ego line of electric handheld and riding equipment in stock and ready to go. Or you can give them a call, phone number 530-226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you go.
And there you have it.
There you have it.
So, you know, we like to do things that are interesting and different rather than always the same stuff and things that you might not hear other places. Things that require conversation, you know, like the old one-minute interview. Boo. Nobody learns anything in 1 minute. Well, guess they might if it was a really short message. Like maybe they knocked you down on a stage because you were saying something. You probably learned a lot from that, Lear.
Well, what I learned is I learned a lot about myself, which is I did not give in to bullies, so they weren't going to stop me. And then I learned they were bullies. It's like, you can't even sit here and have a conversation with me. All you've got is violence to shut me off. Well, it's not going to work. So.
Yeah, takes a little more.
I kept going, you know.
Takes a little more time to actually learn things. So when you were doing, so when did you found the organization, the Women's Liberation Front? When did that start?
That was in 2013. Yeah, that was 20. So it's 10 years old. It was in September of 2013.
So it was like right around that same time.
Yeah, well, that's why. Because what happened was that all of that sort of, like we say, Trantifa, all of that sort of gender, you know, that whole sort of group of them were really coalescing into a political force at that point. And in 2013, that summer, the summer before we had had our event in Portland and I'd had to have the armed guards. The next summer, we wanted to meet in Toronto. It was pretty much the same group of us. And a friend of mine in Toronto has an interesting situation where she is part of it's like an artist co-op. So the whole building is filled with like artists, apartments for artists, or like condos, I guess, because they own them. But the street level on the bottom floor is a gallery. So if you live there, you get 1 week a year to have your art displayed in the gallery space. Which is a great idea if you're an artist. It's, you know, it's hard to have those shows. So, but that year, she hadn't been able to have one because she had injured herself. So she didn't have any work to display. So she said, hey, we're going to use the gallery space for this little conference, and we'll all just meet here, and we won't worry about the Quaker Friends House anymore because they were refusing to rent us any space ever again. So we needed a place to do it. So she said, everybody come to Toronto, and they can't kick me out. I live here, so we'll just have it downstairs on the first floor, and that sounded like a great idea. She said she could fit about 100 people in there. That seems about the right size. So in the lead-up to this, two friends of mine were traveling around the country, and they were trying to do like a little mini tour where they were trying to have open discussions about this whole concept of, quote, gender identity and why it was dangerous and destructive and why, you know, there are better responses to this than what we were seeing and why especially it was dangerous for children to do these kinds of harms to their bodies. And every single one of their stops got canceled. So they were not able to have a single one of their talks that whole summer. Yeah, no, it was horrible. And it was always the same thing, that the venue, whether it was a bookstore or like a church basement, whatever they had rented, would be flooded with these completely deranged, violent phone calls, threatening arson especially. And then they'll do that kind of deep dive into, oh, who works in this place? So it was like a bookstore. Oh, well, on their website, these are the employees. So then the employees would start getting harassed, and then they would find out the employees' children, where they went to school, and then there would be really threatening emails to the employees with like, oh, we know your children goes to such and such school. This is deranged. I just need to say this out loud. Normal people don't behave this way, if it's an idea you really don't like. But this is now standard practice for this particular lovely group of people. This is what they will do. They will come after you. They will come after your business. They will wreck you. And they will make you terrified for your children.
Yeah, and that's, the movement of peace and understanding.
Supposedly, yes, right.
Really not.
I just want, it's like, anybody who's on the left here, I want you to have to face this. Is this really what you wanted? Are these the values that you thought you were espousing? Is this the world that you want, where people are just hounded out of terror for their children's survival because of an idea you might not agree with? Is this really what we were after? Because this is where we are, and there's no point in pretending. These are the people who now are taking control of the culture. And they've got all the institutions. They've managed to get all the universities, the media, everything. This is who is behind it. So, and that's, and I've watched it happen over the last decade.
Yeah, it's really kind of scary how this has been accepted as normal. And
normal behavior.
Not a mentally ill problem. And more people are just accepting it, that it's okay to be this way. And it's really not. I mean, it's a terrible breakdown in our society.
Well, it's the left wing authoritarianism is what it is. And I know there's authoritarians on the right, you know, it's a problem everywhere. Humans can do these things, but this is the left wing version of it. And I want people who are, you know, identifying as being on the left, who think that they have some kind of progressive whatever, you have to face how bad this is. This isn't just some fringe group who just did this to me for random reasons. Like, everybody I know has been through this now. I know people who have lost not just their jobs, but their entire careers as lawyers and doctors. They'll never work again in their chosen field because of this garbage.
Yeah,
and is this really the world that you want?
Yeah, and how do they get away with this? I mean, how does it start, and how does it end up ruining somebody's career?
They do it because no one will stand up to them, and this is the problem with bullies every time. Hmm. Like, I think of my friend who's the lawyer, who now has to work in a bank. She will no longer be a lawyer ever again, lost the most wonderful job. She left her job. Nobody in that organization would stand up for her. They were all terrified. It's not even that they didn't believe her or agree with her, but they're like, we're scared of these phone calls. You know, they're threatening all the staff and the staff's children, and we're all terrified, and so, well, I'm sorry, but we just have to fire you. And they did. They fired her.
Why can't law enforcement step in?
Do something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. She called the police. They were calling her house 100 times a day, too, so it wasn't like she didn't file a police report. No one will do anything.
Yeah, it's really
horrible. So anyway, that was happening. So it was 2013, and I'm still, like, you know, I'm in this state of shock. Like, is nobody going to stand up and say we're not giving into this? If one person had just stood up, but nobody did, and so they just get, like all bullies, they got more and more empowered. Ha ha! We can make everybody do what we want. All the grown ups are just dancing on a string. There was not a single bookstore. You would think bookstores, right? They're supposed to be people who will defend the First Amendment no matter what. They're bookstores, right? That's why they
exist. Exactly.
None of them, not one of them, would stand up for the First Amendment. It was really amazing. I mean, in a horrifying kind of way.
Yeah.
So that happened, and then we were all supposed to be at the end of their tour, which was going to end in Toronto at this event. I arrive in Toronto. I get off the airplane. My two friends are standing there. So not only has their tour been just completely, they didn't get to do a single talk. They're like, well, we lost the space that we were, the gallery space is no longer ours. Why? Because the building, the people who own the building got like 100-something death threats and arson threats to the building, and they ended up having to say, no, you can't do this event here. It's too scary. We can't have arson on the building. So then we didn't know what to do because we had like 100 people coming. So very quickly, we had to call everybody who wasn't yet on the way and tell them just to stay home because we didn't have anywhere to put them unless they wanted to rent a hotel. And then everybody who was already there or was already traveling from a far distance, like, we'll just try to figure out where to put you. And we had rented an Airbnb in the neighborhood just for some of the out-of-town people to stay. But, I mean, there was no way it was going to fit 100 people. But, you know, we ended up having, like, 40 who, like, we just had nowhere to go. So we did all pile into that Airbnb just to have, the lectures and the talks and the discussions, and then tried to disperse out, you know, more. Like, I rented a hotel room, and a bunch of women stayed with me. And then there were other women who lived, you know, close by in Toronto. So they took as many as they could home with them, and people slept on couches and stuff. But it was completely insane. And then the Trantifa band got sent somebody in as like a mole underground, and so she came to the whole first morning of our event and then told them all where we were. So then they came to that house where we were all staying and paraded up and down the street with their horrible signs. And we ended up having, we had called the police at that point about 3 times, but when they actually arrived, we saw all their threats on social media because they were very public about it. They're like, ha-ha, we know where they are. Here's the address. Everybody meet there. We're going to chase them out of Toronto. We had to call the police. The police came. The police went and talked to them. They were told they couldn't harass us, but they did march around the block a few times. But, you know, at that point, they'd been threatening arson for like a week, and they're clearly unstable, emotionally unstable. And I know we're not supposed to say that, but I don't really understand why. People who threaten arson are not stable people.
No.
That seems like very self-evidently true.
Yeah.
You are going to threaten an incredible level of harm to people you've never even met because you happen to disagree with them about something. This is not a stable mind state, okay? So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We've posted people like in the, at every window. We have like a, you know, a sentry looking out. It's like if they come back, if it looks dangerous, you've got to give the alarm call. And the thing that I remember that really breaks my heart about that entire weekend was there was a woman there who was brand new to all of this. She'd never been to any kind of feminist event before, and she had such a horrendous life history, like all this serious abuse in her childhood. She'd been on the street since she was like 16. Of course, a horrible abuser found her, groomed her, you know, pimped her out to the sex industry. She had a 9-month-old infant in her arms. She'd managed to get away from this horrible man off the street. She'd found shelter in a women's shelter. She'd been there for about 6 months. She's trying to get her life stable again. Like, all power to her. This is, like, the most horrible life, right?
Right.
And she's trying to pull herself out, especially for the sake of this, you know, beautiful little baby that she has. She's, like, 21 years old, right? She comes to our event, and what happens? She's, like, under threat of her for her life because of these crazy men outside who are demanding that we accept that they're women. And then the arson threats, and like the whole weekend, I just remember thinking so clearly, where is she in the building? How close is she to the door? Because if a Molotov cocktail comes flying through that window, I am making sure she and that baby get out the door. If she's first in line, we're getting her out. It's not like there were fire exits. You know, it wasn't safe for us all to be in that small space. It wasn't a public space. We had nowhere else to be because they had shut us out of everything. Anyway, there weren't any Molotov cocktails, but like at a certain point, you know, they make these threats over and over again, and they did try to burn that bank down the year before in Portland, so I don't know. Like, one of them, they say it enough on social media that, you know, it's like every time you see those memes and you hear that kind of rhetoric, you know, anybody who has any, like, resistance left to behaving that way, you know, they're breaking down their own kind of moral compass so that it's okay to do these things to people. Like, that's why that kind of rhetoric is really scary when you hear it.
I know. It's just amazing to me that people don't step back and go, hey, this is a group of men who are threatening women, and let's call it for what it is and do something about it. And law enforcement and basically society as a whole stands back and goes, oh, well, you know, we don't. You know,
must support.
Yeah.
Or you're a bigot, you're a hater, you're a whatever.
Yep.
But I kind of like your overlap of heresy, you know, the vegans, the trans and the anarchy guys all show
it's
up at Trantifa.
Yeah.
And it's like, huh. Well, that, the thing that's interesting, I guess, part of it, you could say, well, it's depressing. That's why we play funny songs, to try to make it slightly less depressing. But when you look at that, that actually starts to make sense in a bad way. But for the people looking on going, what the heck is happening? You've connected those three things, and it's like, oh. We're not looking at three different things. We're kind of looking at one thing.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
That was 2013. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, how about this? Before we, let's take our break a little bit, just a few seconds early. And that way we don't have to chop up the idea. But I'm kind of curious where you guys went from that. I like the way this is kind of unfolding. This is a terrific story. Our guest is Lierre Keith, in case you hadn't caught that at the beginning. And I do hope you will share the archive with friends and whatnot. It's all there at wethepeopleradio.us. Here comes my favorite song. My favorite trans song. Oh, here it is.
doesn't have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
So when you turn your book into a musical, you can use that one. I think that would be an excellent theme song.
Yeah, it would.
Wouldn't it? It's like, ooh, wow, those words are, like, shockingly appropriate. Okay, so...
So what happened next?
Yeah, so now
so,
where do you
yeah,
go?
Yeah, so that was Toronto. So we, you know, faced down the mob in Toronto. So then... The other thing that happened right around then was there's a man in Massachusetts named Robert Kosolek, though he goes by Michelle now, and he murdered his wife. This is disturbing. He garroted her with a wire, and it was such violence that he nearly decapitated her.
Wow.
And he's decided that his name is Donna, and no, Michelle. He goes by Michelle, and he was put in the women's prison. So he was one of the first ones. Where you've got, it's not just like a shoplifter, okay? This is clearly a deranged, violent, misogynist man. And they put him in the women's prison because he decided that he was a woman. And then eventually he sued the state of Massachusetts and got all his ridiculous cosmetic things paid for by the state. So that was all happening at the time, too. They had put him in the women's prison, I think, at that point. And I was just completely horrified. And it just came to realize very quickly, there are no adults that are going to step into the room. Like, no one's coming to rescue this situation. We've lost all of the bookstores, all of these little venues, all of these sort of normal places where public discourse used to happen are now closed to us. Like, nobody's going to stop doing this. They're going to keep bringing more and more violence, and nobody's going to care. So we need a real way to fight back. Like, there has to be some organized effort. It's not going to work just one by one because we're losing. So why I decided let's try to make an organization that'll take some of this on. So I called a meeting, and a whole bunch of women came to where I live, and we spent the weekend sort of hammering it out, and we decided we would call it Wolf, and that's what we did. So we founded Wolf in September 2013 because we weren't going to give in. So
Well, it really is. It's an attack on women. I mean, this whole movement is an attack on women. You see it in every venue, it seems like. I mean, look at women's sports. I mean, it's an attack on women. And I just don't get why our society hasn't stepped up and said, hey, enough's enough. This is insanity. And we need to back off this whole transgender idea. If you want to dress like a woman and act like a woman, that's fine. Go ahead, but don't force it on society, and make everybody else part of your.
Well, we all have to kowtow
dream.
To it, and they get to. They have special rights. They can do whatever they want. And
yeah, everybody's afraid to be a hater.
Don't tell them they're not allowed to. Yeah. Strangle people and do all these things. And you see that, I guess, for somebody out there who would say, well, they obviously get punished for it. But I find it fascinating that 9 times out of 10, the media does not, doesn't explain that was part of the process, that
no.
This was a man dressed as a woman or, you know, whatever we were
doing.
Well,
I watched a video, a news story last week about a women's basketball team, I believe it was a high school team, playing another high school team that had a transgender on their team. This guy was like 6'2". The girls, I think the tallest on either team was like 5'10". And they went up for a ball. This girl and him had grabbed the ball. And he flung her to the ground, injured her. But when you saw the video, it's like that's a guy throwing a little girl around, and people sat in the stands, and yeah, they didn't like it, but you know, they didn't do anything about it. It's
there were three girls injured in that in
yes,
that game,
and they forfeited.
Eventually, the coach called it off. Yeah, he's like, my team is just getting wrecked here. Why are we doing this?
So yeah,
I don't know, it was a man or a woman actually, but whoever it was called it off, and then they had to forfeit. Yeah,
and guess who the bad
and
people
no one
were.
Will stand up and say this is insane. We can see this is a man.
Yeah, and the way the article's written, it was like, well, the coach obviously, you know, he's the bad guy here because he quit. No,
yeah.
That's just the wrong take on that whole thing. It's horrible.
So that was 2013. So that's how we got started. And
I can't believe it was that long ago.
Then it was, and then in 2014, so we spent a lot of time just trying to get things together. Like, you've got to get a website, and you have to write all your materials, and gosh, what is the admission process? Like, are we going to have members, and should we form a 501c3 nonprofit? Well, that takes a long time, but we should probably do that because we need a bank account if we're going to fundraise money. Because we're going to need money if we're actually going to start doing things like filing lawsuits.
Yeah.
Because you know what those things cost. So
yeah.
All of this is sort of, you know, we've got to get it moving. So we're slowly getting all that together. And then in 2014, we had our first really official event as Wolf. Since it was so clear, we would lose any space that we rented. That, you know, no one was going to stand firm. Like, when you lose the bookstores and the Quakers, there's nobody left to stand for the First Amendment. And when I say Quakers, they really did. I grew up in Philadelphia, right? So I know a lot about Quakers. But they used to be really so strong about First Amendment issues because their lives depended on it. There was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, that you were not allowed to be a Quaker. That Quakers had to flee England because their lives were at stake. They got killed for not being the correct religion in England. And they came to places like Massachusetts and tried to be free, where they could just worship, you know, according to their conscience. And some of them were hanged in Boston on the hanging grounds. It was a life and death issue. It was, you could be killed for having the wrong religion. This happened on American soil before America was America. And this is one reason why the First Amendment is so important. I don't want to live in a world where people are killed for their religion.
No.
No matter how much I might disagree with them. It's just wrong. And we're supposed to have figured that out by now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why you used to be able to depend on Quakers. They all knew their history, that they had fled this, you know, horrible oppression, that they still couldn't find safety for decades in America even. You know, that they had been killed for being Quakers. So they were very, very strong about First Amendment issues always. And then all of a sudden, you know, these men turn up and say, oh, you can't let these women rent your basement. And they fold. They completely folded. So
yeah.
We lost the bookstores. We lost the Quakers. I don't know who's left at this point. And then I did remember who was left because my mom was a librarian. The library. So it turns out that if you have a public space in a library and you let anybody rent it, you have to let everybody rent it.
Uh-huh.
And the Supreme Court has ruled on this 3 times, and they have been very clear. Because these are government institutions, they have to be viewpoint neutral. They cannot take a stand on anything. And it could be something as, you know, vile as like the KKK. It doesn't matter. We don't have, you know, official hate speech in the United States. That is not a legal concept. Anybody is allowed to rent that room. If they rent it to somebody, they have to rent it to everybody. So I said, let's do it. Let's go back to Portland, since that's where we're the most hated. We're going to show them that I don't care if they're going to throw bricks at my head. I'm walking into that building, and we're going to rent the public meeting room. So we did. And, of course, the library came under, you know, the usual threats, a huge barrage of nasty emails. The head librarian was actually really great at that point. I know he's not there anymore, so I don't know what it's like there now. But at the time, he was really wonderful, and he would just send them back these really short notes. The correct response to an event you don't like is to have your own event. You are free to rent the meeting room. And that was it.
Clever idea.
He came all day long. He came to our event. He sat there the whole time and took notes. He was utterly bewildered by the end of it. He was like, I don't understand why this material is so, why are they so mad at you? And I was like, they shouldn't be, but they are. So we did. There was, of course, a group outside that screamed and yelled at us, but they had good security there. We didn't have to hire our own. And we were able to put on our whole event. They were not able to interrupt it so that it had to stop. And we felt like that was a great success. So that was our first like big public event. But since then, we've followed that model a lot. Like when we went to public events, we just jump over everything else. There's no point. It's anytime you try to rent something that's private, you'll get canceled. We've had events in, we have had multiple events in Portland. We have Washington, D.C., New York City. Seattle was huge. That was in 2019. That was a, you can watch the videos if you want. It was a huge event. There were hundreds of protesters outside screaming, yelling. It was like a zombie apocalypse. You know, like down, they're pounding on the glass windows. I thought they were going to break the glass.
Wow.
And we had pretty much the entire Seattle police force there protecting us, surrounding the building and getting us in and out. And it was like just absolutely mind-boggling what just the level of hatred they had
do
for
you,
us.
Do you get any support from other women's organizations? I don't know what whatever happened to national organization.
She's
of
laughing.
Women
I'm guessing that's a hard pass.
It's been terrible. Like NOW was an early adopter of this whole gender identity nonsense.
Exactly.
They
I remember
pushed
that.
It from the beginning. They pushed it from the beginning. So they're like the enemy at this point. I mean, they were some of the people who brought this.
What?
And it's just heartbreaking. Yeah. Yeah. What? They're going to have to change their minds eventually.
Oh, sure.
In a few decades, everyone's going to look back and be like, this was insane. I don't understand it. I had nothing to do with it. So they're all going to pretend that it didn't happen. It's going to be just like lobotomies, you know, where suddenly it was over and then everybody pretended like, oh, no, the entire medical profession wasn't behind this. It's going to be like
not.
In the 50s when they did chemical castrations on gay men. It's going to be exactly like that, where everyone's like, oh, no, I didn't do that. No, some of you did, and the rest of you thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
We have these kind of medical scandals just semi-constantly, you know. Thalidomide, when they gave that to women, it ended up, you know, with a really,
deformed
yeah. And
children,
we still have DES daughters and granddaughters and grandsons, too. It affected the boy babies as well. So we have these, you know, periodically, these fads, essentially, and then everybody has to, you know, kind of re-scramble when it sort of collapses. This will collapse. There are enough laws. It's already collapsing in Europe. That's the good news that everybody needs to know.
I've heard that.
It's already happening. Dutch, the Swedish, Norway, all across the UK, that France, they're all saying, all right, put the brakes on. There's no evidence this helps people. It destroys children. What are you all doing? So they've all had to take a huge step back. And some of them have already passed laws that you can't do this to children. At the very least, some of the children now will be protected.
What's the...
it hasn't happened in the United States yet. We are still fighting this battle. But there are court cases that Wolf is involved in and other groups are involved in. It is coming. We have had some really great wins in the court system already. We haven't gotten a lot of press about it, but they're very exciting. So we just have to keep fighting.
What's the justification they use, the actual women's organizations? What's their justification for allowing this to continue?
You know, their public statements are about what you'd expect, where it's the same sort of those mind-stopping cliches. Trans women are women. We're here for all women. It's like, there's no such thing as a, quote, trans women, all right?
Right.
There's men, and there's women.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with saying that out loud. We're a sexually dimorphic species. Animals are, you know, from billions of years now. That's what we've been doing. And you can't change sex. There are no mammals that can change sex. There's a few fish that are what they call sequential hermaphrodites, and they will change.
Uh-huh.
But that's not us, okay? We can't do it. Nobody can do it. There's no such thing. And, you know, I mean, I can talk about the history of how this happened in psychiatry, because that's a lot of where this started. And so if you want that history, I'm happy to lay that out. But eventually it took over more than just the psychiatric profession, and it took over the medical profession, and then bit by bit, of course, they got the academics, and then now it's everywhere. You know, they spread it everywhere, so...
We haven't talked about the psychiatric part, but, you know, we had Sharon Byrne, we had her on a while ago, which is kind of how this all got started. I read that article that Jennifer Bilek did back in 2018, and I was like, I got to find her. She's got to come on the radio with us. And I'll tell you what, getting people to come on the radio to talk about this, it's taken me since 2018. And so Sharon and Aaron Friday...
And then
you, but I had a lot of people the other night. I did a meeting in a really rural town, and had Sharon come in on Skype, and I thought, this will blow their hair back. It was super funny. About the fifth time Sharon said the word penis, I thought their hair was... Because I could see like people going, oh, my God, what did she say? But it was really,
really
cute, because then they were like, wait a second. You're right. And, like, normally their meeting is done by, like, 8:15, 9:30. It's like, get out. You have to go home now, people. But they start figuring out, hey, wait a second. This is a big deal. And then everybody wants to figure out, what do we do with it? But one of the questions was, how does psychiatry, like, rationalize this as an okay thing?
All right.
That was a hot topic, so if you have some insight there, we'd love it.
No, I do. I mean, the basic history, it was 1910, there was this guy named Magnus Hirschfeld, who was German. So this is the beginning of psychiatry as we know it. You know, this all started in the very late 1800s. So there's this whole idea that, you know, oh, maybe the brain, maybe the mind, you know, we could make this into a real science and understand the human mind. And, you know, it's not a bad pursuit. There's all kinds of mental illness. Maybe we can help people, or at least even normal people could be helped to be happier than they are. You know, we all suffer. We have anxiety. We have depression, whatever. But I understand the impulse. Like, you know, what can we apply? We've learned all these other scientific things. Why not apply it to the human mind? So then you have a group of people who are the sexologists, and they're trying to figure out human sexuality as kind of a separate thing. So it's a sort of a subset of this new science of psychiatry. So this guy, Magnus Hirschfeld, he's one of them. So as early as 1910, he writes a book called The Transvestites, The Erotic Drive to Cross-Dress.
Mm.
So he'd interviewed enough of them that he already got the pattern. That there was this group of men who are absolutely compelled, and they are compelled because it's sexually arousing. That they want to wear women's clothing because they find it exciting, they find it titillating. And the problem is, you know, as we start to talk about this more and more, people get uncomfortable because we have to talk about sex. And then I'm going to say things that sound completely insane. And it's not my fault. I'm just telling you what's out there, okay? I'm not making any of this up. I couldn't make it up if I tried, all right? So that's the beginning of an analysis of this, where this man interviews enough of them that he realizes there's a pattern here. And it's based on, you know, a sexual urge that they seem unable to control. And it sort of takes over their personalities until it's an obsession, and it just ruins their lives.
Hold that thought.
Yeah.
Because we have to have a little free enterprise break, and it just so happens, oh my God, I know you're going to be super shocked. I have two great songs for this.
Oh, good.
I found all sorts of music I didn't know existed. I had such a good time. You have no idea. Oh, my gosh. So you are listening to We the People. We are chatting with Lear Keith, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice segue back to the psychiatry. carry on.
I remember that Suzanne Vega song. I remember that album. That was a good album.
I discovered it.
So when we talk about the psychiatry of this movement, I find it interesting that it's now okay. I mean, it is a mental fantasy for these people. to now it's going to be okay to involve children, which, I don't know, I'm thinking ultimately that was what they were going for to start with, but maybe I'm wrong. But look at this whole fantasy at the library with the cross-dressers and story hour. I mean, what's that all about? I mean, that's sick.
It's deranged.
It is.
It's deranged. I don't know what anybody is thinking, and they are going to be very sorry at some point in the future when people look back on this. I was like, they're just going to say, what were you doing? And look at those videos of those horrible men shaking their butts in the faces of tiny children.
Mm-hmm.
It's just deranged. I don't know. I have no other word for this. And the fact that people are letting this happen to children, I don't understand it.
Mm-mm.
So.
No, it's.
Anyway, yes. I mean, they're doing worse than that to children because, of course, they're blocking their puberties and giving them dangerous drugs and then doing surgeries on them. And the whole reason that at least they needed to create this concept of the transgender child. So first of all, this whole concept of transgender did not exist. In the first half of the 20th century, everyone understood it was transvestic fetishism, that these were men who had, you know, this sort of bizarre sexual urge. And that went on till the 1950s. But what happened was right about that time in the mid part of the century, the science of endocrinology developed. So suddenly, science started to understand things like estrogen and testosterone and that these were sex hormones and the effects that they might have on people's bodies. And that's when they start to develop this concept of the transsexual. So before that, that was not a thing. But right around then, when the science makes some of this stuff a little more possible, then they need a concept so that they can start to use it. So that's when they come up with this word, the transsexual. Before that, no one thought that somehow you could be a man trapped in a woman's body, that there was some, you know, mystical essence that could get stuck. And once the science then is there and these medical procedures are there, then they develop the concept. It doesn't come before it. It only comes after it. So by the 1960s, there's these support groups set up to support what are now being called either transvestites or transsexuals. In fact, they had a magazine called Transvestia in 1960. It was like a support group magazine that had photographs and stuff. And by 1970, there were 40 clinics in the United States that would give men wrong sex hormones and do breast implants on them and then do these completely horrifying surgeries on their genitals, which I don't even want to describe because it's just so horrendous. But from the very beginning, there were skeptics, and I just want everybody to understand that. There were psychiatrists from the very beginning who said, this is a mental issue. You cannot turn this into a medical problem. People need psychiatric help. There's not a single other psychiatric condition that we treat by doing surgery on people. And, you know, the best...
Not legally, anyway.
The best kind of, like, metaphor or, you know, parallel condition would be anorexia. Like, we don't do liposuction on anorexics. We don't affirm that they're fat and then even remove more body fat from them. We get them help. Like, it would be completely immoral to do that, and everybody understands that. But in this case, they've all decided that, no, this is the thing people need. So right away, there were psychiatrists who, you know, have put down their feet and said, no, this is completely the wrong direction. They lost. I mean, for now, they've lost. And there were also feminists from the very beginning. So in 1979, Dr. Janice Raymond wrote a book called The Transsexual Empire, and she predicted all of this. She explained exactly what was wrong with their framework, that a woman is not a costume, that a woman is not a collection of body parts that a man might collect, that if men don't like the role that society puts them in, and a lot of men aren't comfortable with it, then they should fight that and decide to be free people and, you know, make a movement that is about human flourishing to say, look, let's open this up more. You know, men are allowed to cry. Men can play with puppies and kittens. Like, men can learn to knit. Like, you know, have a world that's just bigger opportunities for everybody. That's what feminism was supposed to be about. Like, why do we have to live in constrained little boxes where our behavior is so tightly controlled? Like, that we're supposed to be able to choose more things for ourselves at this point in human history. And the goal here isn't to, you know, reaffirm those boxes, because what the trans are doing is they're just saying, well, I don't like my box, so I'm going to take your box. And so their version of what a woman is everything that women try to fight. So it's this like hyper-sexualized, hyper-pornified. I mean, I can talk to you about some of the pornography that they love, that they make. And it's just really horrifying. And they call it sissy porn. And this is going to be disturbing. But, you know, the narrative is that a man gets sort of trapped, usually by some kind of dominatrix person who forces him to become a woman. And the entire thing is really a subordination fetish. So the fact that he's forced to wear women's clothes and then forced to take estrogen by this overwhelming figure, the fact that he's humiliated by this is what provides the sexual thrill.
Mm-hmm.
So for men, for these men, these specific men, it's so crazy, right? But for these men, being transformed into a woman is the ultimate humiliation, because being a woman is, by nature, humiliating, is what they say. And they've written entire books about this. Like, I am not making this up. Andrea Long Chu, look up his book. It's called Females, A Concern. He won an enormous prize for this book. He's been published in the New York Times. This is literally his thesis, that being a woman is, you know, ultimately about being completely subordinated, not having a personality, having a blank, black look in your eyes, and being sexually available to any man who wants you. That's what it is to be a woman, and he wants to be that thing, because that's what gives him a sexual thrill.
It's at the Harvard bookstore, just in case anyone was curious.
Yeah, no, this is a real book, and it was really, you know, in the New York Times. This is what they say. I am not making this up. I could not make this up. And this is what this movement is. It is a sexual rights movement for these very sick men. That's all it is. Because no normal man believes anything like this about women or wants to do this to his body. No. These are people, I want to have compassion. These people are absolutely suffering. The problem is they're winning, and they're changing laws all around the world so that this stuff will be done to children, and they're putting rapists in women's jails, and I won't have it. So I can't feel sorry for them, but I can't.
No.
They're winning.
I mean, the true women's movement will ever get on board with trying to counter this or shut this down, or is it just too far gone?
I think they're going to have to eventually, but I think it's going to take time, because they have absolutely cast their lot on the other side. So I think it's going to have to be a whole other generation now that takes over those organizations bit by bit and, you know, has the paradigm change. Because that's what happened on the other end. You know, this whole new group of younger women took over, and they had been trained about this in college. This is where they got these crazy ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And they took over, and it, you know, they weren't old enough to know better, I don't think. They haven't had enough life experiences to see that this was just really a pack of lies. So it's going to have to go the other way. Eventually, I think the issue of children is going to win the day, because so many parents now are so upset. And I'm just going to tell you a really brief anecdote about this. Years and years ago, when I was still pretty young and my mom was alive and all this, I remember talking to her about the Vietnam War and asking her, like, when do you think that everybody was against, like, when did it change and a lot of people became against the war? Because I know in the early 60s, most people didn't know anything about it. And then there comes a moment where there's actually a movement against the war. How did that happen? Like, how does that kind of social change take over? You know, like, what's the tipping point? And she said, because she was alive for all that, she said, it was when everybody knew somebody who had come home in a body bag. So it wasn't necessarily a family member, but it could have been your brother, but it was the boy next door. It was somebody you knew from high school. It was the kid you dated down the street when you were 16. It was your cousin's son. It was everybody suddenly knew somebody. When there were enough Americans killed and the grief was everywhere, that's when people were willing to say, maybe this isn't the best thing in the world. Why are we fighting? Why are young men being killed for this? What is this war about? And they were willing to ask questions. And I think it's going to get to that point. And it breaks my heart that all these children are essentially going to be in body bags. They're not going to end up dead. I'm not claiming that. But their lives are destroyed. You cannot put a 10-year-old on puberty blockers and have a normal life.
No.
You definitely cannot put a girl, a 13-year-old girl, on testosterone and remove her breasts and think that she's going to have a healthy life. She won't. She's going to have cancer. She's been thrown into medical menopause. Some of these girls, they're 17, 18 years old. They already have urinary incontinence from the vaginal atrophy. They've had their breasts removed. They will never breastfeed their children. There are already young women who have come out of this cult. They're 23, 24, 25 years old. They are now having their first baby. Their reproductive organs are a mess from the testosterone, and they cannot breastfeed. And they are heartbroken at what they've done to themselves. And they want to know, where were the adults? Why didn't somebody stop me? I was 13 years old. They took my breasts off. And that's the question I have for everybody listening. We have got to stand up and be counted.
Well,
because they're 13 years old. They don't know better. It's our job as grown ups.
They're kids, and somebody has to make a decision for them. And the sad part is,
we don't let kids do any of those other things.
You know, your analogy about Vietnam, you know, everybody knew somebody. Unfortunately, this movement, I forget, I heard somewhere it was like a half of 1% of the population is trans, and yet they have this huge voice and this huge impact on our society. So I think we have a long, long road ahead of us before enough people get on board with this as a mental illness. I mean, do you disagree?
It's a mental illness, and it's one that is very much encouraged and then produced even by the pornography industry. So that's what we're up against.
Yeah.
It's huge, right? They're just churning these guys out like turtles because they get bored. That's what porn does. You know, it wears down your endorphin receptors. You need stronger and stronger material, more and more extreme stuff. And some of them head down the road toward child sexual abuse images, which is a serious kind of horror. But some of them go this direction, and they get into this, quote, sissy porn stuff. And the next thing you know, they've been turned into this level of just, crazy obsession about this subordination fetish, essentially. They're not capable of having just regular, loving, respectful sex anymore with their partners. They just are deranged, and it's really hard to pull out of. I know very, very few who have ever come back the other way once they get that deep into it, and the porn industry is absolutely responsible for it. Mm. And I'm not saying we all don't have agency. You can turn that computer off. Men, if you're out there and this is describing you in any way, shut the thing off. They're after your soul. Like, it only ends in madness.
Well, like, for heaven's sakes, this guy, this Andrew, what's his face?
Long Chu.
Check that. I just added it to the page for today so that people wouldn't have to go search for it or crash their car trying to write it down. But just in the Amazon book blurb that I included, everyone is female and everyone hates it.
Yeah. That's what he says.
That's not even a
because
thing.
Because to be a woman is to be subordinated, because it gives him a thrill to think that. So that's the universe, according to him. But that's like the background kind of theology to this movement. And none of us are allowed to say no, because it's, like I said, it's a men's sexual rights movement. And so women are never allowed to say no to men. And that's why they hate me so much. That's why they've literally come after me with pepper spray. I've been beaten up in the streets over this now. And it's like, for what, people? This is it. This is the movement. You want to mutilate children, and you want men to have, 24/7 access to the most deranged porn and destroy their families over it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm going to keep saying no, and I don't want rapists in women's prison. So I'm here to defend the girls and the women.
And you guys are doing...
I do feel sorry for the young boys who are getting caught up in this, because they're not old enough to know either what's happening to them. This is an incredibly predatory industry, and now the medical industry is climbing on board, because they can make a lot of money from some of these procedures. But can we just say Jazz Jennings, what happened to that poor young man? It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and crazy.
I am Jazz, that if you've watched the show, it's horrible what they did to him.
Well, all of this, just so people don't skip over it, I included the link to the Women's Liberation Front. And
Thank you.
This is a battle that you would like to... join and be part of the lawsuits. Sharon did a really... I'm going to have to do another program with her or you or the both of you about the lawsuits that you guys are doing, because that is stuff that the people who listen to our program would be like, heck yeah, we're on board with that. Absolutely on board with that. The women in... or the men in women's prisons. There are no women who want to be in men's prisons.
There's zero, literally zero.
Yeah, zero women want to go dress like men and go hang out in the men's prison. That seems like a bad health decision.
Nobody does it.
Nobody does it.
It's all the other way. Yeah.
So you guys are actually suing over that, because they are literally prisoners. We are going to have to run away and thank you and do this again on a different day. Lear, Keith, you have been amazing, and I thought I would send you out with spam, because, that's the meat that everyone loves to hate. Thanks so much for being on with us. You can find the archive at We the People Radio.
Thanks for
coming on. It's a great show.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back next week with something fun.